It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 224 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with Nadia Bear and Nathan Luth, the creators of a series of graphic novels called Impure Blood. It's a well-told tale about ancients and fantasy and many other good things that they'll describe as we talk about them. We also discuss how the book came to be and how, as a couple, they worked together as creators, which is an interesting process to me. We'll also talk about another book they've developed called Melting Down, and it's really interesting subject matter. They'll talk about that during the interview, so I'm sure you're going to want to listen. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Nadia Bear and Nathan Luth, creators of several books, but the one at C2E2 that I really liked was Impure Blood. We'll also talk a little bit about Melting Down, which is a fascinating little comic. How are you guys doing today?
We are good. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to talk with you. Why don't we go ahead and start off, and since Nadia tends to be the person credited with the story, how did you guys come up with the story, Nadia?
The story was something that I had rolling around in my head for several years. I had dabbled in D&D a little bit and, of course, written a terrible fantasy epic in my head based on those campaigns and characters. Mm-hmm. So that's the origin story of the story. And then we transmuted it into a graphic novel style story when I started writing it all down.
Now, why don't you give people sort of the TV guide version of what this series of graphic novels is about?
Do you want to do the pitch?
Okay, yeah. This is what I usually do at conventions. Okay. The brief synopsis is a steam fantasy epic about an enslaved gladiator who is the last of an ancient race and finds himself conscripted into a quest by a mysterious young lady who is on the trail of an artifact she believes is tied to their mutual heritage.
Mm-hmm. And it says on your website, it says that dubbed the Abomination because of his appearance, Roan carries within his human body the blood of a mystical and nearly extinct race known as the Ancients. And all this has to do, Dara is the girl who comes and offers him a chance at freedom if he will help her. So all kinds of interesting stuff. It's a very diverse story, which I kind of liked. All kinds of different things going on. Humans are usually bad, but not always. Ancients or people with ancient blood are usually good, but not always. And there's a lot of interesting things going on about it. Are you guys steampunk fans? Is that kind of where this notion came for this?
I'll let Nathan talk about that. Because, like I said, it was an epic fantasy, like traditional sword and sorcery type of story when I started, and he's the one who decided to take it in the steampunk.
I suggested it. I had recently become aware of steampunk as a genre or aesthetic, and it seemed interesting to me. It seemed to loan itself to the themes of Nadia's story. I can't honestly say that I was into steampunk before we started Impure Blood, but kind of by way of Impure Blood, I've gotten to know more about it. And by doing a heck ton of Googling images and whatnot, I've I still wouldn't say I'm a part of the community, but I'm definitely interested in it and have gained a respect and an admiration for it. Mm-hmm.
Now, probably both of you had something to do with the development of the characters, but Nadia, since you're the credited writer, we'll ask you, how did you come up with the various characters and give them different personalities?
Well, the first character was Dara. She was based on my character in a D&D campaign. And everything kind of evolved around the story built out of Rhone and Dara. I knew what Dara wanted. She's on this quest to find her roots. Mm-hmm. Rhone, to a certain extent, shares that. I mean, he knows the ancient bloodline that he came from. But other than that, he's been shunned by society. And then I took a look at what they would want out of their own story arcs and who the people I needed to plug into that were. Mm-hmm. So people like Elnor, who is Dara's bodyguard because she is undercover princess of Eldendor, which I guess spoilers. Is a spoiler if you've only read up to volume one. But we've published past that, so I think I can go ahead and spoil it now.
Catch up, people.
Yeah, catch up, really. It's on the internet.
Well, while you brought that up, let's go ahead and talk about that. There, on your website, which is impurebloodwebcomic.com, if you want to get a taste of it or if you want to catch up with what's going on, you can go there and read the comic. And every Monday, you guys put out a new page for folks to read. And that's kind of a fun thing because you've got three volumes out now. And the fourth, several of the pages are out there, which I enjoyed reading because now that I've read the three volumes, I really want to know what was going on next. So I'll kind of have to make this a Monday thing for me to be able to keep up with this. So while we're on the subject, let's go ahead and get this going because I always get criticized. I don't bring up the stuff right away. How do people get a hold of Impure Blood, the first three volumes, if they want to buy the paper copies?
There are buttons on the website directly under where you can read the comic page itself that will take you to our online store and CreateSpace, and you can order hard copies online. Digital copies, I'm currently working on getting up on Comixology, so those are coming soon. Mm. But if you can't wait, I do sell digital copies at conventions via Dropbox link, so you can grab those.
Okay.
Or send me an email, actually. I'd be more than willing to send along a link and do that kind of thing if you wanted to do old school write-in mailing paper that.
Well, wait a minute, but what's the email address people should write to you at?
Let's see, contact us at impurebloodwebcomic.com.
Okay.
I'm also on Twitter and Instagram as Nathan Luth, N-A-T-H-A-N-L-U-E-T-H.
Okay.
Pretty much anywhere you can find Nathan, he's willing to sell you
something. It's kind of true. And hey, Google me, you're bound to find something I've done out there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, let's get back to the characters, because I really want to talk a little bit more about Rhone particularly. He's my favorite of the characters so far, because he's got scars all over him all the place, because he's been a gladiator and he's had to fight so much of his life. And so now he gets bound to Dara by an oath that kind of convinces him that she's got ancient blood involved as well. And when they go out, the great thing about your story is there's lots of movement going on. It isn't necessarily exactly the same from book to book, so you have to pay attention as you're reading the comic, which I really liked about it. Is Rhone based on anybody? You know, he's kind of an archetype, I guess, Nadja?
He's kind of the archetypical, what would you call him, the reluctant hero. Mm-hmm. He has absolutely no interest in humanity. If it were left up to him, he'd just disappear off into a forest somewhere and leave humans to their own devices.
Mm-hmm.
But through his oath to Dara, and then he makes a couple of friends among the rest of the recurring characters, he starts to change his opinion and he stops seeing things so in terms of black and white. I think the comic overall, the entire story is all about individual identity and how much is determined by your circumstances and how much you determine by your actions and your reactions.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. He's a little more yellowish in skin tone.
A little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
A little more. Dara's got glowing eyes, which she wears sunglasses to cover at the beginning. Of course, that's a spoiler right there, I suppose. But as the characters go on, the two of them, everything seems to rotate around their friendship or their relationship, if it's not a friendship, really. So we get to see a lot of things going on. And, of course, it's not in the present era, at least as we know it. And the greatest thing is that Rhone tends to solve problems with his fists, which, of course, being a gladiator, he would do that. And so I always like the fact that he does that. There's a funny sequence where they tried to dress him up, which I got a huge kick out of. They tried to make him go undercover on the streets.
Yes.
They put him in this wonderful costume that is just so the least undercover he could possibly be. It seemed like I had to laugh when I saw the drawing of that. So these guys, they're not necessarily the best or the most streetwise of what they do.
Yeah, and I get it going out there's a lot of fish out of water humor going on there, or a little bit of tongue-in-cheek stuff. I mean, he's very obviously not human, so, you know, trying to cover that fact, and also he's like 7 feet tall, so trying to make him go incognito is, it wasn't going to work from the beginning, so designing that particular outfit was great. I call that the colorblind musketeer look.
Yeah, he's got a big purple hat, and he's got a green coat on, and, you know, you couldn't stand out more if you tried, seemed like, so really liked that very much. One of the great things about the characters is that you guys see the humor in the situations. It's not just a video game in the sense that they just go along and keep punching and kicking as they move. We get to examine them, and we get to understand them as you go along, and I think that's one of the endearing parts about the story, is how you do that, is how you make them, because of the story, it's funny to use the word, but more human as they do things. And I really like that. Did you guys intend doing that, or was that just kind of a natural thing that just happened? Did you have to work at it, or was it just something that happened with the characters?
It's something that I was conscious of from the beginning, especially having the conflict between human and non-human characters. I mean, the title itself of Impure Blood is a statement about how polarized this world is. Mm-hmm. And I consciously tried to make the non-human characters kind of become more human as the story progresses, and then some of the human characters as well. I mean, at the beginning, everyone in this story is very black and white. They have the way they see the world. And then as the story progresses, everything kind of fades to gray, and everyone fluctuates and makes different decisions than what they would have made.
Mm-hmm. And now that's definitely been one of my favorite parts about reading it and being a part of it and following along. I'm actually almost as in the dark as the reader is a lot of the times. I mean, I get the script in chunks, but even I only kind of know what Nadia's endgame is here, so.
That was going to be one of my questions, though, was how do you guys work together on this stuff? So apparently that's the answer, is that, Nadia, you come up with the scripting to a point, and then Nathan gets to develop that. Is there give and take between the two of you as far as that goes? Nathan, if you get something and you... I was wondering, because if you see something in the artwork and you go, you know, that's not going to quite work visually that way, and you guys probably have to negotiate between each other as to how you're going to make that happen.
Yeah, trust. There's a lot of trust, but then I think that's important for any writer-artist collaboration. Nadia, when we met, didn't know a lot about comics, and I kind of know about story structure, and I've kind of been a fan of stories for forever. And I kind of know how to put one together, but as far as the nuts and bolts of actually making it work, that's more Nadia's department. So it's my job to trust her with the story, and her job to trust me with putting the right emphasis on the right story beats, getting the right information on the page. And I say for the most part, it's, I just kind of go with whatever she's written. Every once in a while, I'll be like, this phrasing is a little awkward. Would XYZ work better, perhaps? Mm-hmm. And she will either tell me, no, that's deliberate, or, okay, that's okay. Yeah, do that instead.
Yeah, we both kind of keep veto power over our own respective domains, where I'll suggest something where, oh, I have this thought, and I think this would be a cool image, and that may or may not ever make it into the page that Nathan's working on, depending on how he lays it out. And he'll come to me and say, hey, I want to have this visual reaction, or can this so-and-so character crack this joke? And a lot of times I'll just give them a look. No.
But then other times you're like,
it's very serious business.
But then other times you're like, oh, that is good. So again, trust, give and take. I do try to get as much as Nadia wants, or Nadia asks for in the script, onto the page. So, because again, I have faith, if she found it important enough to put in the script, then it is probably going to come into play in some kind of way later. 300 plus pages in, there's only ever been one instance where I actually had to go back and redraw like half a page. So I think that's a pretty good track record.
And we caught that before it went
out. Yes, and we caught that before it was published.
So it's good to let people look over your shoulder sometimes.
Definitely.
It's always good. You said something that kind of puzzled me or interested me, Nadia, and the fact that Nathan doesn't know where you're going. Do you know where the story is going to end up?
Yes, okay. I do know where it's going to
end up. She says she does.
I have all but the last 20 pages scripted.
Ah.
And I mean, the story is outlined. I'm just working on the exact words that all the characters say, because there's a lot to wrap up in volume four. There's a lot more to wrap up in the final 24 pages. I don't want to miss anything. I don't want to leave any loose ends, and I want to do every single character arc justice. So
that's intentional. That's intentional on your part, because
yes.
Is it because Nathan has got to blab these kinds of things if you tell him too much? Or is it because you want him to be just, like you said, like be a sounding board as you go through, and he gets the story, he can kind of give, you know, a response back and tell you this is good or that this is not quite so good kind of thing? Is that how this is working?
A little bit of both, I would say. Part of it is also that, I mean, when it ends, when I finally write all the words down, it's going to be over. And there's part of you that says, this isn't finished yet. I don't want to put the final nails in this. Mm-hmm. But then part of it, too, is, oh, I don't want to tell Nathan because I want to see his reaction as he gets it, because it's the best form of alpha reader you can get.
Right. Oh, very true. Very true.
Because then, I mean, if he says something completely just doesn't work, I want to know that before you get it out too.
Or if you don't get a response. If you get no response
if you get
from
no it. Response, you're like, well, I wrote that joke in there and he hasn't laughed once. Come on.
That's because I'm concentrating.
That's good. It's like, you know, because Meredith and David Fincher are working on Wonder Woman. Of course, now that's coming to an end because of their change. But, you know, there's not a lot of couples that make comics. It was like when I was working at a hospital and there was this lady who worked there. And in order to get to know her sons, because they were all into football, she got into football. And what she discovered, interestingly enough, when she went to work, a lot of the guys clustered around her because here was this woman that could talk football. And lunchtime, she was the most popular woman in the place because, man, she'd have guys all sitting around her wanting to know her opinion on what she thought of certain football stuff. And it's true in comics, too, although I think it's becoming more that more women are enjoying comics or coming into it and as creators and stuff, too. So I always like to see women writers and artists and things like that, because I think you guys can contribute something to our understanding. I mean, we like punching and kicking and stuff like that. And what you want is more of a plot and more of a story and more depth to the characters, which I think you provide for us. It's that nice balance that makes the story. And honestly, I really got a real sense that that was going on when I was reading the book, that this wonderful balance was taking place between the two of you. You know, I wish more comics had couples on them, because we would get more stories that are interesting on all the different levels.
I think anytime you have two creators who know each other and like when you have a shorthand working development where you don't necessarily have to put every single last direction on the page, the other person can guess where your head is at.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's a very different dynamic than working up a very detailed script and just giving that to a good artist who doesn't know the first thing about where you're coming from. I think there is a difference when you have a collaborative relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also it helps to be able to, you know, be able to yell down the hall, hey, dear, is Caspian supposed to have this XYZ on his face at this point or what? Yeah.
Now, I got to ask you one thing, of course, Nathan, this is, and I don't know, again, this may be something you guys work together. There's one thing that stands out right away the moment you open the book, is the fact that it's unlike other comics. Most comics will have the layout where it's taller than it is wide, and your book, all the way through, is always wider than it is tall.
Yeah, we publish in landscape format, and this is probably one of the questions we get asked the most, actually. Mm. The entire story is that this was originally a submission to Zuda, DC's now, I believe, defunct webcomic imprint talent search.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 8 pages were our submission, and we made it into the final. We were finalists, and I believe you can still find that online somewhere, but
we were respectively middle of the pack.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember who won in that particular seed. Don't quote me on this, but I think we were up against Celador, which if you know, great. If you don't, go check it out. It's really good. But at any rate, after we did not win, we knew we wanted to keep going with it. But then we had the debate, do I go back and redraw the first 8 pages or do I let it ride? And
let's be honest, the we there was Nathan.
Do I want to go back and redraw these first 8 pages or do I let it ride? And I toyed with the idea of chopping up the panels and trying to reassemble them. And I didn't like how that flowed together. And eventually I was just like, screw it, let it go. And it's a decision that I've had mixed feelings about several times.
We've learned a lot about printing.
Oh, yes, we have. Oh, yes, we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, it gives it a very cinematic feel.
Yeah.
To me, it has much more of an action setup feel to me. Things happen a lot. And I really like the way that that works, because most comics, they'll occasionally do that. They'll move, and there was a Batman where Greg Capullo basically made you turn the comic all the way around.
Yeah.
Which was a great thing. And so it doesn't bother me when I see things in a different format than I'm used to. I enjoy it. It's like black and white versus color. Right. And so for me, when I started to read it and I realized that it was going to be this way the whole way through, you get into it. You understand that this is the way it's going to go. And honestly, when I went to read these other books we'll get to in a couple minutes, I was so used to the cinematic way of this one that it took a little while for me to get back to the regular way of reading comics. I liked it so much. So it's really good. And also, you do this on the web too, as we were mentioning. You put a page out on their web, and the size and the format of it probably works pretty well on the web too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely lends itself better to on-screen viewing. And I didn't want to give the impression that I regretted it. Mm-hmm. It's more that it's presented an interesting challenge, both in terms of hard copy publication and also panel composition on the page. So whether or not I do it again, we'll see. I'm not ruling it out as an impossibility.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's really interesting to me, though, is this you guys' first comic together then?
Yeah.
It is so cool. Now, had Nathan, of course, you were the one who were more familiar with comics. Had you done other comics before this? I just want to be clear. Find out about that.
Not professionally. I'd done other collaborations. I'd worked on some with other indie guys. I had also done some freelance work for some children's books and that kind of thing. But I think this was the actual first total long-form comic that I had ever actually done professionally or independently or at all, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't look that way. It feels very professional, you know, from the start all the way through until as much as I've read, it has a very professional feel to it. It feels like you know where you're going, which not every comic does. You know, some comics meander around and here's the last page. We got to end things. But this one has, and of course, maybe it's the two of you working together that makes it happen. You get a strong sense. It's like Marv Wolfman and George Perez when they did New Teen Titans way back when. And when they came, you could read the book and you knew you were going someplace. You could sense by the way that it was presented, they knew where they were going. You know, instead of, you know, some people get in cars and just drive around for hours and don't know where they're going. But you guys got in the car and you knew where you were heading. And it just really feels like a strong story. And of course, I've got to ask, you know, we'll update to where we are now as far as things go. Volume number 4, according to the book, is going to come out in winter of 2017.
That is correct.
Okay, and when that happens, is there more for this world, or is that going to pretty much tell the stories you want to tell?
I wouldn't close the door on the world necessarily, but this is going to close the door on this story. Mm-hmm. These particular arcs where these characters are all going to be wrapped up. There will be more, like the unnecessary epilogues in Harry Potter. I shouldn't open that can of worms. I'll have people yelling at me. But I'm not tacking on an epilogue like that. You will get a sense that there are other things that will happen in these characters' lives. I'm not going to wrap everything up neatly with a bow, but every central conflict from this story should be concluded there.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And Nathan, why don't I get back and tell one more thing about your art? I particularly enjoy the way you do people's expressions on their faces. Because
me too.
Again, there are some comics when, you know, the old joke, they have a t-shirt, you know, this is Darth Vader when he's happy, yeah. This is Darth Vader when he's sad. But when you do it, you see the same character and you see a lot of variation in their emotions and what's happening internally. And we often get a strong sense of what's happening internally by how you draw their faces. And I think that's great. I wish you'd show other people how to do that, honestly. But there's a lot of good with that. It's a compelling book. When I got started on it, I was so glad I had the first, second, and third volumes, because I was able to ship all the way through. And then when I got to the third volume, I went, oh, crud. We got to wait on this one. So we got to. It's one of those things to develop. That's why I was glad when I saw your website and you had more. If people get a hold of the volumes, they can go out there and start reading the pages.
Absolutely.
To keep up with stuff, which is super good. So I really think Impure Blood is one of those great books. I go to conventions a lot of the times these days, trying to find independent books or comics that I don't think people know about as much as they should. And that was the case when I read your book. I said, "Oh man, I'm so glad I got this because it's really something worth reading, and it's really something to pick up and engage you as a story." And I can't wait for the fourth book to come out. I'm going to be every Monday going to your website to see where things have gone since the last Monday. So it's great stuff. So I highly recommend this book. It's called Impure Blood, and you can get it, as we said earlier, there's ways to access it. And when it gets to Comixology, you can download those digitally, which is always a good thing. So all those good things. Now, I did want to talk before I let you go about another book that I picked up at your table at C2E2. And it's called Melting Down. And the subtitle is A Comic for Kids with Asperger's Disorder and Challenging Behavior. And while that's true, I think it's also very educational for those of us that don't know much about it. Mm-hmm. So I really like the book. Do you want to talk a little bit about this? Now, this, of course, is back in the regular format, the landscape, the portfolio. Portrait format. So it's a little different, but I never knew this much about this. And it's kind of been a mystery to me. So this book, I would say that even if you don't know somebody with it, would like to know a little bit more about it, it's really, really educational, I thought. I came away knowing so much and really feeling for the characters in there.
Wonderful. Then mission accomplished. The project is one in a series which was originally, it's an ongoing project commissioned by Oconomowoc Residential Programs of Wisconsin. And the easy way to find them online would be to just Google ORP Wisconsin. But they are a residential program, just like it sounds, based in Wisconsin. And they couldn't find any books about kids with Asperger's and autism spectrum disorders. So they approached my regular client publishers, Roundtable Comics, and commissioned a series about kids with Asperger's for kids with Asperger's that would also be readable by people who had very little exposure to the autism spectrum and make it understandable to them.
Well, what I liked about it, the story is apparently, as you have here, is written by some professionals who work with folks with Asperger's. And then, Nadja, you adapted their work. What was that like? Did you have to turn it into a story? Was the story already there? How did you work on that?
For this particular one, the story was already there. There was an intermediate step between the professionals and my adaptation. There was another writer at Roundtable Comics who did kind of a novelization. And then I adapted that novelization, trying to break it down into steps for a comic book. At the time, this was no longer the first comic book I had done. And this wasn't the first adaptation I had done for them. I'd done several books where you have to go from 200 pages of scientific text almost down to 50 pages of comic, where you get maybe 50 words of text on a page if you're lucky. And even then the artist is going to tell you, no, I don't want this many words on there. I want more pretty pictures.
Sorry, geez.
Well, I liked the kid. Main character's name is Benjamin, and we see him very young. And we see the world through his eyes, which was really great. And right off the bat, he's putting a train together, which apparently is really good. And, of course, the cover I got to talk to. I love the way that he's looking at the world, and the world is all full of puzzle pieces he's trying to assemble. And we get to the first page, and his dad makes him breakfast when mom normally does. And there's this great big wrong across the father doing that because it's not in his usual pattern. And I really like the way that you guys did that, and we got to understand him. And the way that we see the world through his eyes was really educational. I came away knowing so much more. And then, of course, he goes to places where he interacts with more kids like himself. And we get to see how people work with them and get them to function in the world a lot better. God, it was just so educational. Benjamin, we get to see him grow up, so we do see some character development along him. And the book sort of comes to an end, and I don't want to spoil the ending, but let's just say that he has, through his various experiences, found a place in the world, which I liked. And, you know, that was something to me, too, because a lot of people look at these kinds of situations as unresolvable. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always feel really badly about that. I don't know any better. And when I hear people say that, I kind of think that maybe it is something they can't resolve. But this to read there and get to see where he gets to a place where the world makes sense to him, you know, I wanted to cheer when I got to that part.
And that was very much something that ORP wanted to see in the book, was that it is possible to manage autism spectrum. It is possible to live with it and become a fully functioning member of society. I almost said life after autism, but there really isn't an after. There is a life with autism. And that's the point. There is a life with autism that you can have. So.
Mm-hmm. That's just great stuff. How long did it take you guys to go from when you got the information to make it into a comic to when it came out in print?
That's a good question. It was a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it was printed in 2013, but okay. I still think it's a terrific book. Maybe a better question is, how can people get a hold of this book?
Amazon.com. Okay. That would be another good way to search my name or Nadia's name or Melting Down and Asperger's. I think any combination of those would help you find it pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Also on RTC, the Roundtable Comics webpage.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so worth the read. When I got through with it, I was so, you know, I really felt there's a wonderful, and I won't say what it is, but there's a wonderful last page that your artwork kind of tells us. It shows us without telling us, I should say, the way the future is going to go.
Yeah,
which I don't want to explain that, but I really love that page because it, instead of being sort of diagnostic, which a lot of doctors and medical people can be, we get a sense that things are going to go well from this point on. And I really love that. I just thought that their artwork was just so nicely done. And your scripting and everything, it all came to a really nice, a great experience as a reader. I always think comics can teach us so much. And we've gotten away from that. I remember the days when the Justice League came out in like the 60s. I'm that old. When I would read Justice League, they would teach us science.
Oh, wow.
They'd go to a world and all they would teach us science. Now, here's the air people, and here's the ground people, and here's the water people and stuff. These are the three elements of the Earth and stuff. And I would come away going, oh, that's interesting. I know more than I did when I read the book. And I feel that way when I read this book, was that I came away with a much better understanding. Now, do I know all I need to know? Probably not, but it's a great start for me, I feel.
Well, if educational comics is something you're interested in, Nadia and I have also collaborated on a graphic novel version of the United States Constitution.
Yeah, I saw that in there. I didn't get a chance to pick that up when I was out in C2E2. How do you get that? Is that through Amazon as well?
That is available through Amazon as well. Also, we sell it at conventions and also, again, Roundtable Comics webpage.
Very cool. Well, you guys do some great stuff. It's great reading. I love my Long John stuff, but my cry out for variety is such that I want to read other stories, and these books really filled that variety need. I really wanted something a little different. It's like going and eating chocolate cake all the time.
Right.
You want something else, you know. Chocolate cake is wonderful, but you can't eat it every day, all day, and my reading is such that I want to read other stuff. And,
yeah.
Your books are just wonderful.
And in my personal opinion, and don't get me wrong, I love superheroes, absolutely. Spider-Man, Thor, and Batman are my favorites. But there's so much more that comics is capable of than just superheroes. And to this day, still, you talk to somebody who's not a part of the community, and you say comic books, they automatically think superheroes. Whereas, you know, if you go to Japan or Europe or anywhere else in the world, comics can be detective, and comics can be crime, and comics can be fantasy, and comics can be there's baseball comics in Japan, for crying out loud, you know. But in this country, comics and superheroes are inextricable. But that's kind of like saying I like movies, and people automatically think that you must only like action movies. So
Now, one other thing I want to mention too is you guys have a company name that I really enjoy called NA Squared, which of course are the initials of both your names, which are great fun. I like that. Maybe if you go out and look under Comixology, you'll see that too. Now, when this comes out, this will be coming out on Sunday, April 10th, and Nathan, you'll be at Wizard World in Madison, Wisconsin.
Just that is correct, sir.
So if you're in that area and you're going to go to that convention, be sure to stop by the table. Do you know the table number yet?
They just sent it to me. I believe, I guessed I would say the wrong thing right now, but I can't send it to you.
Well, it's okay. What we'll do is look it up in the program. He'll be there, and you know, just make sure you stop by and check out these wonderful comics and these wonderful books, which will enhance your understanding, which is a wonderful thing in life. I think that comics just aren't punching and kicking. I just think it's so great stuff. So now you have other comics conventions that you're coming to the rest of the year. After Wizard World, what things are you going to be doing?
Next up for us will be in our very own backyard, MSP Con in St. Paul, MSP Comic Con. After that, we're also doing Denver Comic Con and Grand Rapids Comic Con are what we're excited for so far. And also, we have an exciting new addition. We'll be going to C4 in Canada in Winnipeg.
Very good, very good.
We're going international.
Yeah, how about that? Very cool. So, yeah, it's interesting. You seem to do a cons about a month apart from each other, except for the Grand Rapids, which will be from June until October. So you get a chance to see people. So if you're going to be at those conventions, you're thinking about going to them, I highly recommend you get there and check out their good stuff because they're great books and lots of good reading. So are there other projects that you're doing that we should be aware of?
Let's see, there's one in development. I'm not sure how much I can and should talk about it.
Okay.
I've got one thing for a round table right now.
Okay.
That it's about underprivileged youth finding a place to learn a trade.
Mm.
So I'm sure they won't mind a little free publicity. But, so go to shoprat.com and you can see the program that we'll be working with in the near future.
You know, that makes me think of something when you said that. I was watching, of all things, Dr. Phil on the television, and there was a black teen or early 20, and he was telling this Dr. Phil that there was nothing he could teach him. And I kind of, and his reaction was, you know, guess what? There are things that I can teach you, even though there are differences between us, there are things that you could learn from my experience that might help you. And this book, it makes me think about that. So if it's that along those lines, I really think that would be another great book to get into because there's a lot we can learn from each other regardless.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm not sure exactly when the release date for that is slated to be, but I like the premise myself and hope to have it on my table in future conventions.
Very cool. So keep up with the great work and keep doing your wonderful things, and I'll keep tabs on you. And what we'll do is maybe we can talk again sometime in the future when you have some other projects coming out.
You bet.
A quick update since this interview took place. I got an email from Nathan wanting to let everybody know that the booth number at Wizard World Madison this weekend is going to be B, as in boy, 38. And he wanted to verify that and make sure that was absolutely correct before the information got in there. He also wanted to mention, too, that Impure Blood has found a publisher in Russell Nolte's Wannabe Press. I talked to him back in episode 202. And he's got some information about that coming up. So we'll keep our ears to the ground about Impure Blood with Wannabe Press. So again, that's wannabepress.com. These are good things to keep up with, so I'm glad to be able to share them with you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.